Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives, discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
Welcome into this week's program. Hope you're doing well. Please leave us a note. Of course, get to our Facebook page, facebook.com. Take it from us. If there are any stories, if there are some issues that you would like us to touch on, please let us know. In New Zealand this week, it is Mental Health Awareness Week. mhaw.co.nz. That is the website. And this year, the theme is around reconnecting. And that would make sense after 2.5 years of COVID and uncertainty and fear and anxiety and worry and everything that's gone with that. Now's the time to actually reconnect. What's going on for you? Who are the people that you need to connect with, get back in touch with? It could be nature that you need to reconnect with. It could be a favourite place. So there are some really good ideas and really practical tips on that website. I would recommend people to go and have a look. If you're a little bit unsure as to what the theme is and how it might pertain to you, go and have a look at that website, mhaw.co.nz. The theme is to reconnect. I had a personal theme this year. I'm not one for setting New Year's resolutions, but I thought this year, you know what, I need a theme. I need something that is maybe values-driven, just something a little bit different. I'll play around with that. And so for me this year, my theme was contribution. I wanted to be contributing my time, contributing thoughts to others, you know, being part of the school PTA where my daughter is, those sorts of things, doing some coaching, you know, giving away, being generous with time, being generous with spirit, because to me that is a very strong value for me. So that is what I have gone with for 2022. So this week it is time to reflect on that, how I'm going in life and whether I'm living up to those values. And you know what? I think for the most part I am, although if I reflect, I've probably taken on too much this year, which, you know, might well be a byproduct of having a theme like contribution. You know, it comes at a cost. And I think my mental well-being has been a bit up and down this year. I've come up with a name for it, which I don't know whether that's a good thing or not, to be honest. It might be a pointless exercise. But my name for this feeling is scatterbrain. Sometimes I just feel like I'm all over the show. And so recently I actually took to writing down on a piece of paper all of the things and all of the people that I'm feeling responsible for. And it was a pretty bloody long list. And it scared me a little bit. And I'm thinking, man, can you actually do all of this and do it well and still be responsible? And it's not so much that I've got the time to be doing all of the things that I want to be doing. It's not that. That is not the issue. I think my partner calls this mental bandwidth. I don't think I've got the mental bandwidth to do it all and to do it all well, and it does come at a cost. And so I've labelled the scatterbrain. I've been a little bit up and down recently, and it's just probably being anxious about living up to my values and not wanting to let people down when maybe the best call would be to say, you know what, I can't do that. I'm not going to be doing that, and being firm with that. You know, too much going on and then too much time to think. That's the other thing, too much time thinking for me. And as we know, the brain is not equipped to think our way out of personal distress. More often than not, it makes things worse. And I think that's probably what's happened to me recently as well. As a people pleaser, I'm just not very good at saying no. But I am aware of it. It's a work on. I need to do that better. Perhaps saying no could be my theme for 2023. What do you think?
This is Take It From Us. Real stories, real life, as told by you.
Take It From Us. We have two very special guests on our program this week. Shortly, we'll hear from Rutu King Hazel. She has a clothing label, Hope is My Homeboy. And it's about honouring her late brother. And she will tell us her very personal story about her relationship with the brother that she loved to bits. He took his own life a few years ago. But from that has come, I think, some real hope and optimism for Rutu. So we'll hear from her a little bit later on our program. First up, though, is Brad Smaler. You may have heard about Brad and his story. 2014, he seemingly had the world at his feet. He was a professional wakeboarder. He was successful. He was popular. He had a lakeside home in Florida. It all changed in 2014. He got something wrong with his wakeboarding, and it's left him as a quadriplegic. So that was 8 years ago. And he's put out a book, and it's a bestseller in New Zealand. It's called Owning It, The Ride That Changed My Life. He has a speaking tour and lots of engagements to look forward to this year, and quite the story to tell. And we thank him for his time. Brad, thank you so much for joining us on Take It From Us. How are you doing?
Yeah, g'day, Ken. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm a big believer in not just glazing over that question and saying, yeah, I'm good, thanks, when I'm not, you know. I've had a bit of a rough year. Was on bed rest for most of the year. Thankfully, I'm actually able to get up in my chair again now, but I'm on a waiting list for another surgery and just, yeah, some complications with the life of a quadriplegic. And so, yeah, it's been tough, but I'm doing pretty well considering.
Well, look, thanks very much for answering that honestly, because I'm sure you probably get sick of people asking how you're doing.
Well, don't necessarily get sick of it, but it's more just when people ask it without actually really wanting to know the answer. You know, it just has become like a tag on to a greeting now. So it's
right.
And yeah, that's one of those things. It's picking and choosing when you answer it honestly and how in depth you go into it. Like, obviously, if you're just passing someone by, they probably don't want to hear your whole life story. But I think it's important to ask that question, especially between mates, and answer it honestly. And
Stories. I had an ex-work colleague. Him and I were close for a little while, and he was in a wheelchair, and he said to me, he said, Kent, the one thing you soon find out is who your friends really are. Have you found that to be the case with you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't really see much of the negative side of that. Like, I didn't have any of my close friends, at least, or anyone who really mattered to me didn't, like, disappear after the accident or anything like that. Obviously, there were, you know, a few, like, women that I was friends with, but we were probably became friends through mutual attraction, and they, you know, they disappeared or, you know, just weren't interested in making an effort or anything afterwards. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's no loss to me. I don't see that as an issue. If they're not wanting to be a part of my life as I am now, then that's kind of good riddance, really. Like, the real ones have all hung around, and I really felt a lot of love from, like, the global wakeboarding community, from, you know, the New Zealand community, kind of getting behind the fundraisers and everything early on after the accident. And so I've had some amazing support.
What do you think would be the one question people are scared to ask you that you're actually comfortable to answer?
Can you still have sex? Anything around that. I think people are so interested about that, but obviously very afraid to ask. And like, I get it, you know, I don't really want some stranger just coming up and asking me about my sex life. But I think it's something that people are interested in. And so that's why I've written about that a lot in my book. And I've detailed that and kind of given a really really honest view at what that side of things is, what that's like in my situation now and what it was like before, just to kind of give that contrast. So, that's probably the main one. I think people are, wanting to ask but aren't, or, you know, that are afraid to. But I'd say the question I get asked the most, or have gotten asked the most over the years, is how's progress? And that was one that early on I really struggled with, because I wasn't making any progress as far as I was concerned. I wasn't getting my arms moving. I wasn't getting any of that back. So I felt like I was letting people down when I was answering that question, honestly. And so I found a way to be able to answer it in a positive way while still being truthful. And so people would ask me, how's progress? I'd say, it's great, mentally. That's where I've been making the progress. And actually, that's where it really matters. Because I've sort of got to the point where I'd struggled to get my movement back for so long and really, really strive for that and focused on nothing but that. Mm. And when that didn't come, I looked at it like, you know, what is the real goal here? Is it my movement, or is it what my movement or what I think my movement will provide me? And that's my happiness. So it's sort of like, you know, the whole means to an end type thing. And the, you know, the means was my movement, whereas the end is the actual happiness. And so sometimes you can bypass that means, and it's not always the way that we think that, you know, our journey's going to go, like the kind of progress and the getting back to, I guess the word recovery can be taken in different ways. And I think the real recovery is for someone to be okay, to be happy, to you know, be at peace with the situation, to have found acceptance. And yeah, so I mean, it can come in multiple ways.
How have your values changed in the last 8 years?
I mean, I'd like to think they haven't changed too drastically. You know, felt like I had pretty good values and everything before my accident, but there's a lot of things that have evolved and changed, you know, whether it's around like attraction and relationships and things like that. Obviously physical attraction is still important, but, you know, you start to really acknowledge deeper things and more important things, like just connection. And yeah, I think my focus on what drives me and what gives me fulfillment has changed. You know, it was obviously with wakeboarding, it was quite a self-centered endeavor with, you know, trying to become one of the best in the world and get sponsored and all that sort of stuff. And so the attention was very much on myself. But I really found that one of the things that brings me the most happiness now is sharing my story, like trying to help others, connecting with others in a way that, you know, they might be struggling with anything. It doesn't have to be that they're in a wheelchair. They can just be going through anything. And if they're able to connect with my story, and whether it's through my public speaking or my book or just through my social media, yeah, I find that that's really what drives me now, is to be able to kind of have those sorts of connections. And I think maybe that's what it comes down to, is connection. That's really kind of the core focus. And yeah, just knowing that, like, what makes us feel good. It's funny, I was thinking about it the other day, and like the person who in all the movies is the one that's like, you know, the hero, like the superhero, they're out there helping people. Like, that's surely what the goal should be. We're in, I don't know, we get tied up in our own world and our own self, kind of our own goals and our own sort of things that we're after. And I think it's about a lot more than that, about helping others. I think that's what it really comes down to.
The title of your book is Owning It. What came first, that or your story?
Well, the title or the actual process of owning it?
Yeah. Did you go through deciding to write that particular way with being so candid and being so open and honest, or did that approach come from the title being Owning It?
So the title came afterwards, and even going into it, I didn't really know where it was going. Because I've never written anything before besides a social media post, you know, like there's really, really nothing, no training, no background in writing for me. And so I just started kind of brain dumping my story, and I really wanted it to be open, and I wanted it to be raw. And it was, I was writing it while I was going through the process of recovery and learning a lot of the lessons that that came post accident. So I think it was cathartic for me. It was healing just to get it out. And then yeah, we kind of played around with a few different titles. And that was sort of what we settled on. And I kind of realized then that, because I owning it, you know, that was a big part of what was written in the book, but we didn't necessarily focus on that as the title until afterwards. We didn't, didn't really focus in on that. But I think, like, owning it is about taking all the good and bad, everything that our life is, whether we like it or not, and embracing it and going, this is me. What can I do with the me that I am, not the fantasy ideas that we have in our head that we kind of build up this rip story around us that may not be entirely true. And I think so embracing that and really grabbing hold, which is that step further than acceptance. Rather than just accepting who we are, it's owning it. It's an empowering way of approaching that. And so I think the final step in owning it for me was writing the book and getting it out there for everyone to read. It's like, this is my story in all its juicy detail for anyone out there to read and to think that what they want about me afterwards. You know, that's up to them what sort of opinion they form. And so that's, yeah, that was kind of, I didn't realize that was part of the journey to really owning it for me, but that was huge, and it's really got me into a really good place in my life.
So writing the book helped you through the grief process?
It really did. It kind of, because I wrote the book, it's all first-person present tense. So even, you know, me as a 21-year-old, I had to put myself in my mind as a 21-year-old back then and write it from that approach, from that mentality, that attitude. You know, so there might be some feelings that come through or vibes that come through earlier in the book that, you know, might come across quite egotistical, quite, you know, bragging or whatever. But it's by design to really kind of build that part of the story up to show how it really affected me afterwards. That actually putting myself back in those years, the best years of my life from before my accident, that I, you know, really got to get out there and, you know, travel the world and just have a lot of fun and everything, like, that was really tough to put myself in that frame of mind and sit there with it and write about it. It actually kind of sent me into a bit of a depression. But I felt like that was important because obviously if that was the feeling that was coming up, then there was something that needed to be addressed there. And so as I worked through it and then I got to everything after the accident and was able to process the learnings that I've had from my, I guess, life coach, if you want to call her that, her name's Susie, and she would teach me all these things and help guide me through this, you know, the mental battle. And as much, you know, we would sit there every week and chat away. And then when I had to write about it and I had to form this dialogue between Susie and I had to fully write all of these learnings out, which I'd learned them and I'd taken them on, but for me to craft them into an explanation in a way that people could really understand, actually helped me kind of process it all in my head as well and kind of strengthen the message and my understanding of it. So it kind of, yeah, that was a big part of it. But no, it was a huge part of the healing. And honestly, I wrote more than double what ended up in that book. It was like 450,000 words that I wrote. And there was probably some of that was never actually meant to make it into the book. It was just me processing things, and so yeah, it was great to have some really good editors to help with shaping it all and figuring out what to, you know, like what was needed and what wasn't, and yeah, but still wanting to keep it as authentic as possible.
I mean, yours is a very inspiring and uplifting story, and part of that for me is just learning about how you actually wrote the book using a stylus in your mouth and kind of henpecking at a screen.
Yeah, well, it started as henpecking, and then iPhones had the upgrade to swipe to text, so I was like now swiping, and it that helped my neck and doubled my word count, I'd say, or at least, you know, sped up the process of writing. And but no, that was something, and I get asked the question a lot, like, why didn't you dictate it? Why didn't you just use a voice-to-text software? And there's several reasons for that. The first one is I found a lot of the time I was spending just as much time going back and fixing the mistakes as I would have if I'd just written it myself. And then also by writing it in first-person present tense and also wanting to get really descriptive and spending a lot of time working out how to write what I was wanting to put out there. Just the pace at which my brain worked was not a pace that worked for speaking. It was something I needed to do at a slower pace. And so, yeah, I just worked through it. It's kind of like that, you know, putting pen to paper to get ideas out. Like if you're ever really overwhelmed with ideas or trying to make something happen, it's really helpful to put a pen to paper and actually write it down. And I struggled at first because I was like, putting a stylus to a screen doesn't quite have the same effect. But over time, it started to really grow on me and really became quite a good outlet.
We're talking with Brad Smaler here on Take It From Us. Brad is a quadriplegic and has been so since 2014 when he suffered a wakeboarding accident. I think you'd used the term overwhelmed just before, Brad. Do you still at times feel overwhelmed with where you're at?
I have moments. I don't know about overwhelmed, but no, I still have my moments of, you know, like just because I'm in a good place doesn't mean that I still don't dislike the fact that I'm in this situation. You know, I wish I did have my movement. I wish I could. Yeah, there's a lot of things I would love to be able to do and that I miss every single day. But I guess it's... in my book, I reference the seven Huna wisdoms, and one of those is energy flows where attention goes. And so if you think about that, like I could focus on my attention on the things I've lost, the things I can't do, the things I'm ungrateful for, and I spent a lot of my time doing that in those early years after the accident. And the main growth I think that I made and the biggest change was coming from a place of gratitude and looking at my life and going, okay, rather than looking at what I don't have or what I can't do, it's like, okay, what am I grateful for? What can I do? Or what might I be able to do? And it's kind of breaking down those barriers because, you know, you kind of just assume that there's a lot of things that you can't do, but with the help of friends, like, I've been able to do way more than I ever thought. And that was kind of one of the things at the beginning. I was buying into the fear that my mind was creating around my injury. Like I thought I had to accept all of the fears and everything that I thought being a quadriplegic meant, as opposed to just accepting that this is what is. You know, I would project forward and go, oh, it means I'm not going to be able to have fun, or, you know, no woman's ever going to want to be with me, or, you know, I'm going to be a burden on my friends and family. And I quickly learned that none of those are true. You know, and that's the thing, like, I know that my situation makes things more difficult, but it's only a burden to people that aren't willing to kind of carry that. And to my good friends, they would rather have me around and put a bit more effort in if it's needed than not have me around. Mm-hmm. So, it's been a really, really interesting journey, and I've learned a lot. I've connected with people on a deeper level, even within my family. Like, I don't know, we had this sort of thing like growing up, like I don't know if it was just a sign of the times and the way my parents were raised, but we didn't actively say I love you, like when we'd finish a phone call or going to school or whatever. Like, we didn't do that. We knew it and we felt it, but now we express it, we say it. And I have probably said, well, you know, I never thought I would say I love you to so many dudes after my accident, but I have. Like, and it's just the way me and my friends are now, and we just have learned to express our gratitude for each other, and yeah, I think it's important to do that.
Do you remember feeling gratitude the first time?
Since my injury?
Yeah.
It's a weird one because I've found gratitude in life post-injury, but I'm not grateful for my injury. You know, it's a weird one. But then it's strange because, one thing I learned from Susie is that, look, if I'm grateful for anything in the moment, you kind of have to be grateful for everything that led us here, which is all the good and bad that's happened in our lives. And that's a really hard thing to grasp onto. And I'm working on it, but yeah, it's to say that I wouldn't go back and stop my accident from happening if I could, then, you know, it would be a lie to say that I wouldn't do that. But no, I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've got in life now and for the growth that my journey has provided. And yeah, I know that Brad as a wakeboarder would have never been able to have as much of an impact on the lives of other people as Brad the quadriplegic does. So, yeah.
What impact have you had?
I like to think that through my public speaking, through, you know, even I do a little bit of mentoring with other people going through similar situations. I like to think, you know, some of the messages I'm getting back about the book and the way that people are able to connect with it and apply things to their own stories, I just think it's allowing people to gain a bit more perspective maybe on what's important in life, and also, you know, really learning what we do and don't have control over. I think that's a really important thing, is to know that putting our energy into the things that we have control of, and that we're grateful for, is just, you know, such a powerful way to be. And if I can pass that message on, or, you know, anything, like, and it's a funny one, because even I know some people, like, they look at me in a wheelchair and they go, oh, I'm so grateful for being able to walk today. And that's not really the message I want to be giving people, because that's basing your happiness and gratitude off of a comparison
right.
to other people. And I really think that that's a big problem today, especially with social media, when we base, you know, those assumptions off what we see of that person in their life, when we're not getting the full story. We're not getting the full view. And I think it's just important to know that life isn't a competition. We are each on our own journey, and working on building our own gratitude for our lives within ourselves, without it being based on a comparison, I think is really important. So, yeah, it's an interesting one, because I want people to feel grateful, and I don't mind them, you know, taking a moment to go, okay, I'm so grateful for the use of my legs today. Like, that's amazing. But that's not really the message that I want people sort of taking away. I think there's a lot deeper of a message, and a lot more that people can take away from it.
Mm. And you're so right. We spend so much of our time now comparing ourselves. You know, it wasn't that long ago we had our own tribe to compare ourselves to, and that was it. And now we compare ourselves to people in Lithuania, in Arizona, in South America, and we're constantly doing that, which is causing us to be constantly anxious and constantly thinking that we're not good enough.
Yeah, and we're comparing ourselves to the version of them that they want to show us.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and it's natural. Like, you know, you don't go and hang up the worst photos on the wall of your house. Like, we want to present the best side of ourselves. But, yeah, I think it's important to express both sides and to and just as a viewer or as a spectator of, you know, looking at these other people's lives, it's just important to know that there's a lot more going on in the background. Like, you know, I remember when I was in the spinal unit in the US after my accident and, you know, my level of injury gives me a shoulder shrug but no arm movement. But so I'd C4 vertebrae is what I shattered, but if you go C5 or C6, one or two down, you know, there are the people there getting their arms moving. They're like pushing themselves in a wheelchair, like even starting to feed themselves. And I felt so jealous of them, and I felt so ungrateful for my situation. And then 6 months or so later, I met someone who had gone through a medical misadventure, ended up with a C2 level injury, which means they can't even move their neck. They're on a ventilator, had a nurse by them sides at all time, at all times. And he ended up passing away about a year later. And when I met this guy, I felt so grateful for my injury. And I was like, wait a minute, why am I, you know, nothing's changed with me. Why am I letting myself feel happy or sad or grateful or ungrateful based on other people's situations? So that was a real eye-opener for me. And it just kind of, yeah, just made me pull my attention away from choosing comparisons as a way to either boost myself up or feel down about myself.
Can you give us a heartwarming story from about someone who has been greatly influenced by you? I imagine you get lots of messages and support and encouragement, but also people who are grateful and for your bravery and courage to share your story.
Yeah, I get that a lot. And, you know, I've seen people that have, you know, seen that I've shared whatever it is through my social media, something a bit more real. And then I'll see them come through and, you know, they'll share something open as well. And I think that's where there's real power and vulnerability is, you know, by sharing ourselves openly, we're allowing others to do the same or to feel like they can do the same. I can't think of any real specific examples. I know there's been, you know, other quadriplegics have seen what I've started pursuing. You know, I've been working on breath hold stuff and free diving, which is pretty obscure for someone who can't swim at all. And, you know, and it's just that, like, not necessarily inspiring them to do the exact same, but to go out and look at, okay, what might I be able to do that I never thought would be possible in my situation? I can't really think of a specific example, but...
Oh, that's good.
Even today, I just got a message from a friend in Aussie who's, you know, had a spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury, and he just said he's thinking of writing a book now after reading mine. So that's cool. Yeah, anything like that is really cool.
So he's probably drawn inspiration from you. Who have you drawn inspiration from?
There've been sort of plenty of people within the spinal cord injury community. You know, one of the first guys who I ended up speaking to after my accident, who'd been through a similar thing. He's actually walking again. He had a snowboarding accident. His name's Josh Wood. Really inspiring Australian dude that I just connected with. And, you know, he wrote a book, and he came to New Zealand for a speaking engagement and invited me along. And that's kind of what got me into public speaking. And then there's other people, Emma Carey, she's just released a book as well around the same time as mine. She had a spinal cord injury. Again, she's walking again, but believe it or not, she fell from the sky. Like, the book is called The Girl Who Fell From the Sky. Her parachute didn't open, and she, hit the deck, and somehow, you know, obviously, she had a spinal cord injury. She can't feel her legs, but she can move them. She, you know, she was very lucky with her recovery. But, yeah, and so it was cool to be on the journey, kind of writing books together, and kind of chatting a little bit along the way. And then, yeah, there's a few other crew over in the US. There's some, yeah, loads of really inspiring people to kind of tap into and draw inspiration from.
What's next for you, Brad? What do you want to achieve?
We've been working on a documentary, and I haven't really shared it too much publicly, but we are still working on trying to get the last bit of the funding and to green light it and make it happen. But yeah, we've done everything. We've shot a trailer already, and we've started filming, but we're just kind of on hold at the moment until we can get the rest of the funding in. So that's kind of the next focus. But right now it's, I've got another surgery coming up. I'm just really focusing on my health and trying to get that right. And then, I'd love to do a bit more traveling around the country, and whether it's a book tour combined in with some speaking engagements. I think that's just kind of the main focus for now, is just getting my health sorted so that I can get out and start doing more.
All right. And what's bringing you happiness at the moment?
Hearing feedback on how people are connecting with the book is really cool. As I said, been getting these messages come through, and it's just, for me, it's like, that is exactly why I wrote my book and why I wanted to put it out there. So that's really cool. I did my first speaking engagement of the year yesterday. So that was awesome. That was for the County's Medi-Cal Nursing Awards. And so it was cool to be a part of that. Obviously nurses have been a big part of my journey, and so to give, be a part of that and give them some recognition and share my story was really cool. I'm just enjoying friends and enjoying being up in my wheelchair. 6 months in bed will give you a new perspective on things and new bit of gratitude for the things that, I never thought I'd be wishing I could be in a wheelchair. But, when you're stuck in bed, it's especially after 2 years of lockdowns, and then lockdown ends, and then you're locked down for another 6 months. It was pretty brutal.
Well, look, we're extremely grateful for you coming on our program, Brad, and telling us about your story, and for inspiring so many people. It really is. It's just terrific that you have put yourself in this position and being vulnerable to share. So I just, so grateful for that. And we wish you nothing but the best for the book and for the doco and whatever else lies beyond that.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate you having me on and allowing me to share my story.
Take It From Us. That song is Dominoes by Jesse J. Let's bring in Rutu King-Hazel to our program. Rutu has a story to tell about her brother, who sadly took his own life 10 years ago. And the family, Rutu herself included, decided they wanted to keep his memory alive by honouring him with a clothing label. Fero was an amazing designer. And so they've started up a clothing label a few years ago called Hope Is My Homeboy. She has a lovely story to tell us about her brother, his life, and where she's at now. Rutu, thank you so much for your time to join us on Take It From Us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
What have you been up to?
Well, do you mean in general or just this
Yeah, how's life been treating you recently?
Well, life's really good. I moved from Wellington to Nelson in December. First time leaving my home. And it's been an amazing blessing being here. Yeah, just a huge transition of my life and a huge step for me personally because I come from a big family. So it's been amazing. Yeah.
So you're taking yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yes.
And you're succeeding.
Yes, and I'm the baby of my family.
Right.
So I'm used to everyone being around, Nana and Uncle and Aunt, you know, everyone. So it's huge for me. So that's what I've been up to.
Well, I'm glad. It sounds like you're thriving. We can hear the excitement in your voice. Yeah. Tell us about Hope Is My Homeboy.
So Hope Is My Homeboy is a clothing brand that we launched in 2012 originally. As a family, when my brother took his own life, he was an amazing fashion designer and seamstress, so he had a really eye for design and clothing. So I was, throughout the years of him being here, I spent a lot of time with him being his mannequin, and he would rip down any sheet or curtain in the house. He would pull it down, turn it into a dress, and I'd have to stand there for hours while he's like smoking on his cigarettes and sewing away to 3 a.m. So that's kind of where it all started, the brand. And so after he passed away, as a family, we came together looking at all his gowns and ball gowns and everything, and we thought, how can we keep his essence alive on the earth and also spread a message of hope and kind of just, you know, just be present and sort of establish, you know, what we stand for. And yeah, so the Hope Is My Homeboy was born from that, really. Yeah.
How did that, when you started that project, which was shortly after he died 10 years ago in 2012, what impact did that have on the grief process for you and your family?
When we started the clothing line?
Yes.
What impact did it have?
Because, well, I know that for a while there you started the clothing and then you decided that it was all a little bit too much, and so now you've come back to it. So what was the grieving process just too much at that time?
Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of – I think I've noticed a lot with people that I've followed, especially on social media or just in general that I've come across that have also lost someone to suicide. I've noticed that we, as people that have lost someone, we try instantly to – have control or fix something, or I don't know what it is, but so yeah, we did that where we tried too hard, too fast to save other people. We thought we were, instead of kind of sort of taking care of ourselves first. So that was a really, really hard process for us. We weren't ready to do anything. We couldn't help anyone. We couldn't help ourselves at the time. So it was a huge impact trying to get a clothing line up and running, like literally months after he had passed away. It was just too full on.
Yeah. So I guess the message is that we all need to take the time to look after ourselves, to as long as it takes to replenish those energy stores and get ourselves into a position where then we can maybe try something else.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really important, and it's not something that it seems obvious in hindsight, but it's actually not when you're going through it. Because I noticed personally when I lost my brother, the first thing I want to do was rescue any person that came across my path, you know. And I realized shortly after that, actually, this is huge. And, like, you can't pour from an empty cup. You literally have to take time. And another thing is you think that, you know, like a year later, I'm like, well, it's been a whole year. I should be fine now. Like, I'm okay. Like, you just convince yourself. But really, it's taken me like 10 years to, like, be ready to help others. Yeah.
And I suppose, too, you had people with best intentions saying, look, you need a purpose. You need to be doing something. Why don't you throw yourself?
Yeah, exactly.
And so how did you get the balance between grieving but also living?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the balance, I don't even know if I know the answer to that.
Is there a balance?
Well, I don't think there really is, because I can only speak from my personal experiences and what I think about when you ask that question and about the past and throughout my life. You know, you think that you get to a part where you're like, okay, I've accepted, you know, you go through like 5 stages of grief or so. I can't really remember at the moment. But I remember the last one is like acceptance. And so I got, maybe it was about a few years later, and I like, okay, he's gone. I'm accepting this. He's not coming back. So what can I do? And then when you get to that stage, you kind of start getting back to life. And going, but then other things happen, like normal, like problems in life without the grief. So it's like you just have to. I don't know if there is a balance, to be honest. You just kind of, you have to be really aware of yourself and really aware of your own triggers, really aware of how you're feeling. And that's the thing, yeah, that I've personally worked on a lot, is just being sort of personal and self-responsibility of being like, okay, this happened to you, but you have to carry on with life. And things happen, like maybe your work's crap, or you're at work, or you deal with a customer, you know, normal life things on top of grief. And I just, it was my job to be like, okay, I have to choose how I'm going to deal with this and carry on. So I think that's probably the answer from me about finding a balance is more about self-responsibility and being really aware of who you are, your triggers, and what you've been through, and understanding and that people don't know what you've been through and it's not their problem. Like, yeah, that's probably the thing that comes to my head straight away.
We all want to help, but often we don't know what to say or how to help.
Yeah, 100%. It's, I think even... Yeah, I don't think anyone knows. I think that's the beauty of it.
Tell us about Fero. What was he like?
Oh, man. He was the most sort of extravagant, loud, but also most compassionate, empathetic person I've ever met. He has, for a short amount of time in his life, like he's only on this earth for 21 years, but I genuinely believe that he has just taught me so much personally. He was a big dreamer. He never accepted sort of the norm. He would always be like, why do I have to get a normal job? You know, back in like 10 years ago, or even before, it was like social media wasn't around. And we're all kind of sort of wired or taught to, like, you go to university, then you get a job. But all his life and all my life, that he was always just like, I don't believe that. Like, I want to make clothing. I want to dance around and do whatever I want whenever I want. And he was just always, like, different, very ambitious and very optimistic. And just the most kindest and selfless person, like, I've ever met in my life to this day. And he taught me that.
And in dedication to him, you started up Hope Is My Homeboy all of those years ago, and now you're bringing it back for a very special reason this month.
Yeah. So, bringing it back 10 years later, feel like it's it. I picked it up at the start of this year. It just came to me, and I was like, moved to a new city, and I was just sitting there pondering about life and thinking, what do I want to do, you know, or what's something I can do to help, and feeling like I'm in a really, really good space mentally. And so I just wanted to, again, carry on his essence on this earth, and I want everyone to know who he was, because he was a beautiful person, and if I can be anything like him, like, that would just be everything to me. So the start of it is for me to launch this brand and see where it goes, yeah, in his honour.
And the proceeds are going to Mike King's I Am Hope Foundation. Tell us about that.
So 100% of the profits of the Check On Your Home, of a Hope Is My Homeboy brand, but the collection's called Check On Your Homies. All of that is going to Mike King's foundation. One, because 10 years ago he was the first to support and jump on board when he heard my brother had taken his own life. He was like, how can I help? And in terms of, how can I help? And we're just like, well, we're looking at doing his clothing line. And he's like, oh, I'll wear it everywhere I go. So, yeah, that's the first reason. And the second reason is I think he's just done such an amazing job. I've watched him throughout the last 10 years of my grieving journey, and I just can't thank him enough, you know, for doing it. And just all his empathy. I watch him on, like, the news and stuff, and seeing him even break down, I think maybe last year on the news, I was just like, his heart is just there, and I wholeheartedly trust what he's doing. And yeah, that's the least I could do. Yeah.
And how do we get hold of the clothing? How do we find out what you're doing?
So I'm promoting currently on Instagram and Facebook under Hope Is My Homeboy. But we're on the website to go live on Monday. I have to think what the date is. On Monday, which is hopeismyhomeboy.com. And that's where we will be doing the pre-orders for 2 weeks, and then we'll officially launch after that.
That's exciting, eh?
Yeah.
Having your own website.
I've had a few runs over my time. I'm a very sort of a serial entrepreneur, or wannabe. So I've kind of done a lot of little projects and processes, but this one's the most legit and, like, professional thing I've done. So it's all exciting. Yeah.
And where would you like to go with all of this? Where would you like to take it?
Well, to be honest, I've just, from all the traction, and I had no big plans or dreams. It was just my first thought with this year was like, cool, I'm going to make 50 hoodies. And I thought I might not even sell 10, you know, that's kind of where my intention was going. But, and then stuff picked it up, picked up my story, and then, you know, I'm getting more outreach. So I'm like, okay, I need to think a bit bigger than this. So, I'm a bit of a dreamer. So I'd love to do some collaborations with, like, some sporting clothing brands like Nike and Puma and that, because I personally am a sports, I love playing sports and sports, so that's my personal reason. And also mental health is huge in sports, so that's in one of my dreams, but that's as far as I've been thinking.
We all need dreams.
Yeah.
Hey? We all need dreams, we all need, and you know, some ambition to be optimistic and hopeful. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Look, we wish you all the very best with this.
Thank you.
It is exciting, and thanks for being brave to tell us your story and for honouring your lovely brother.
Thank you. I appreciate you. being on here. I love what you guys are doing too. It's amazing. I had a little listen yesterday, so I love it. So it's awesome.
Rutu King Hazel on Take It From Us, the clothing label Hope Is My Homeboy. All right, we're about to wrap it all up for another week. We need to get to our Sheldon shout out. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Kent. Well, I always love to hear from people who'll be listening to the show. And during the week, I got a message from Kerry. Now, Kerry just wanted to give a shout out to her neighbour, Val. Kerry had to take her dad to hospital during the week, and Belle stepped in just to help out with the kids, helping them when they got home from school. So, you know, it's always lovely to have people in our lives who can be there at a moment's notice, and it's not always family or friends. So neighbours are really important to helping us out. So, yeah, shout out from Kerry to Val for helping out with the kids at a tough time. So
yeah, way to go, Val. It does take a village, doesn't it, eh? And at times we need to roll our sleeves up and pitch in. Great job. Hey, look, thanks very much, Karen. And thanks to Karen Murphy for producing our program, as she does every week. Of course, we had two very special guests on the show today, Rutu King-Hazel and Brad Smaler. Thank you both for giving up your time. Thank you so much for listening to our program and for supporting us. We do really appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns, produced by Karen Murphy, executive producer Andrew Dewhurst, made with the real stories and voices from our community. And for that, we thank you. For more information on anything you've heard on today's show, or for direction on where to seek further advice or assistance, visit our Facebook page, Take It From Us.
Lowry's 50 told me go ahead, put the style up, and if they hit the letter, hey, watch the money palette.